Welcome to episode 432 of the Yes Music Podcast. This week there's been absolutely no time at all in my packed lockdown schedule to do any introduction to this episode or any news, I'm afraid. But anyway, I think you'll really enjoy this conversation we had with Dave Watkinson. It's all about the time his brother and he went down to London and joined Yes. Well, not really. But they did help finish off Tormato. So it's fantastic to be able to welcome back perennial favourite of the Yes Music Podcast, Dave Watkinson. Hello, Dave.
Hi.
And Mark is here as well. Hi, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. Hi, hey, Dave, how you doing?
Hey, good. Very good, Dave.
Excellent. So when you came on the show last time, Dave, with John D., we were amazed that you'd had one close encounter with Yes, or rather cinema. But it turns out that that wasn't the only time that you've had a close encounter with the band. And in fact, there was one time a few years earlier. So take us right back to the beginning of this story. How did it all start?
Well, this was the first time I met the band. And as a very young guy, well, so some 19 years old, I was very excited about Yes. I'd seen them in 77 and was just excited about the whole thing. And I remember clearly that I was reading a newspaper. It was either Bolton Evening News or Manchester Evening News. And there was a guy doing a whole article on Yes. And I read it and thought, yeah, that's great. But how come these guys always get to meet Yes? And they just write an article and they're off, and then they're not really that bothered. And as a cheeky northern 19-year-old, I said, well, I want to meet them. How come I can't do that? That's not fair, is it? Really, in that kind of manner, not really understanding how it all worked. I kind of went, right, I'm going to do that. I'm going to see them. So I wrote a letter to the headquarters, the Hillgate Street, in London, the Yes offices, which I ended up going into in the future anyway, and on another visit, actually. I'll tell you about that sometime. And so I thought, yeah. So unbelievably, I got a reply. So within about 10 days after, I had an envelope dropped through the door, and this was in Bolton in Lancashire, and I clearly remember it now. Opening the letter, think, what's this? I don't get many letters like this. And a letter from, you know, far away in London, which it would have been. And I was astounded. I can clearly see it now. Opened the letter and it said, Yes are now working on the forthcoming album in London. Got your letter. How about you coming down? Not in those, exactly those words, come down and meet them. And I then fell off my chair in astonishment that it actually worked.
Yeah.
And as you'll see in the images, I still have that letter and it's been framed for 42 years, which is a bit sad, isn't it?
Yes, well, do make sure that you, listening, have a look at those images which I've put into the show notes for this week, and then you can follow the whole of this story properly.
Yes. So obviously, when you traveled down to London, I take it you went with your brother. So what was it like walking up down the road towards the studio, to Rack Studios, that is?
It was one of the first times I'd really been this far as a teenager. And my brother joined me. He was very keen on studio technology and et cetera. So he was dying to know what was in there. A very techie guy. And walking down there, well, it was all just a bit too exciting, really, as you'll see from the pictures. I took advantage everywhere, frankly. But I think I can get away with it, as it's 42 years ago. So we were just very excited. Now, we turned up early, as you would expect, traveling all that time, making sure I was on time. And we were greeted by Mickey Most, which is quite a famous producer in this country. Mm-hmm. Lots of pop records to his name. Look him up. He's a great personality. And he met us. He was a lovely host and made us a cup of tea, sat us down and had a chat, me and my brother. And I said, yeah, have a look around and see what's what. The band are not here yet and are due in half an hour or something. So we were definitely a little bit early. within the 45 minutes. So he said, I'll leave it to you. There's nobody else around. And he said, yeah, have a wander, have a look. You know, when they come in, they'll see you.
So it must have been incredibly exciting, as you've already said, to be in the actual rooms where the new Yes album was being created. So before the band arrived then, what did you get up to?
Well, getting up to is really what it was all about because I thought they'd be there straight away and it was hello and a chat and go home kind of thing. But really, me and my brother, he was in the control room quite a lot, having a look at everything. And I went wandering all the way around the studio. So, you know, don't tell anyone, but because no one's listening, obviously. So you'll see in the pictures, very young anyway, I was tapping away Alan's kit and drummed on the kettle drums and strummed a few guitars in the booth, and there's some guitars standing up, no idea who's there could have been. Strummed a couple of guitars, just thought, well, there's nobody here, I can, and whatever, they'll have to come and get me later. Did a run up and down keyboards, including the Yamaha GX1, which is the big monster, hugely expensive Keith Emerson sort of keyboard. I might have accidentally done a few bass pedals on Chris Squire's kit, may have done. I basically was in Yes for a very short period of time as I wandered around, but I'm just not credited. So I had a joyful time sort of tinkering with probably most things, and not only that, you know, my brother did a bit of tapping around on the drums as well, and had a wander, but they still hadn't arrived as we were both doing that. So we went into the control room. Can you believe it? We're in a major recording studio in London, where Yes had just finished an album. And so we sat there, and I may look a little bit relaxed as I took advantage. Crazy, really. But yeah, the detail that's in the recording studio is beautiful. I mean, look at the pictures, and there's far more technology advanced than I. People looking at these images from that. I don't think there's many people ever done this, to be honest. Or even, you know, there's so much. If you have a good look at these pictures, you know, the taped marked on the actual control panel, you know, for the songs prior to being named in full, you know, on the album. So, you know, the studio tape decks, the BS, you know, tapes, masses of equipment, which, you know, we all found just fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I first realized, because me being a gearhead, I took a big look at all those photographs and realized that they had a rather nice API mixing console. Those are pretty well regarded, and they have a very, very good sound. They're very, very American sounding, actually. I was very, actually kind of ironic that they had that in there, but they're a very solid mixing board, and I guess, like you said, they use Studer tape machines, which are very reliable and excellent, which always makes me kind of scratch my head about why they had so much difficulty as far as getting sounds that they liked for that record, because they had excellent gear. So I'm guessing it probably boiled back to their gear themselves that they were experimenting with. Like you said, there was a new keyboard there that they probably hadn't used before and stuff like that. So they all had stuff lying about everywhere, which is not exactly conducive to a good signal path. But anyways, what I am interested in is, you mentioned that you were in there walking around. Who was the first person from the band to arrive? It couldn't have been Chris. He's usually the last one there, right?
Well, a couple of other people sort of did turn up first, which was Claude Johnson Taylor, who's, if you look him up, he's a long history with Yes in various positions. And so he turned up with a couple of lads in the mixing room. So, you know, he turned up first, but the actual first member of Yes to turn up was John Anderson. So we kind of looking out the windows, and after we'd tinkered and played about and had a look at everything closely, he turned up in a little car, actually, in a Honda. I think it was a Honda Civic. So he turned up in that and came in, and I greeted him at the doors. You'll see a photograph there, which is actually in my book, but it's nice to see in color. And he was lovely, gentle and open. It was lovely to see him. I was still as nervous as hell. You got to remember, I'm only 19. These guys have been mostly on album covers and pictures, apart from the Going for the One tour, which they were still distant figures on a stage. So this was a big moment really for me, and how good that it was captured as well by my brother on the photograph, so which is lovely. I mean, I think John looks better than I, but moving on.
So did all the band then turn up?
So, yes, fairly swiftly after John, then Steve and Chris turned up roughly together, different cars, one in his Rolls Royce and one in his Bristol car. They came in together and really chilled. Everyone was chilled. John was chilled, and then Alan turned up after that. I believe Rick was in Switzerland. That's what they told us anyway when we asked the question. Rick was in Switzerland. But everyone was really chilled out.
So while you were there, I take it that they might have played something. Was there actually any playing or recording? Did you witness anything? Was there anything that you heard that was not released?
Well, we had, there's a booth there, you'll see the photo, there's a booth, and John went in the booth and doing some vocals to Money, the track Money. Mm. We asked them then, they said, oh, is this going to be released? But they said, no, there's too many people released songs called Money. In that kind of manner, so we're not going to do that. I think ABBA's done it and Pink Floyd will leave it there. So, but John was in there doing a few vocals, which was, amazing to see. But then they played, this was just really surreal. The whole thing is quite surreal. Yeah. So, we're in the mixing, behind the mixing desk, and you'll see in my Perpetual Change books, so Steve and Chris are sat next to me. Both dressed interestingly and extravagantly, having a cigarette, listening to. So we listened to Money, a number of versions of it, as I recall, as it ran through. But you've got to remember, there's not many opportunities you sit in a major recording studio and listen to on these £20,000 speakers. Right? There's nothing like being in a recording studio listening to this stuff. Because you'll never hear it again the same. You just don't have the equipment to listen to it like they do.
Yeah, which is one of the things that I think that people don't seem to realize. And it's one of the things that bands have the most difficulty with is that when they're in the studio doing this stuff and they hear it back and they're all like, this sounds fantastic. Then they go and get it reproduced and put on, vinyl or whether it was cassettes later on. They bring it home and they go, I don't recall it sounding like that. and it's usually because, it doesn't translate, which is why studios later on started bringing in speakers which were called NS10s, which were very low grade monitors, but they figured that if they could make the mix sound good on that, then it'll sound good on everybody else's stereo systems, which is why they started integrating those speakers rather than using $20,000 speakers.
So you saw that really happened after that time, maybe. Was it at the after 78?
Yeah, most likely.
Yeah. So I think if you ever get the chance to listen to something in a studio, it's on another level, really.
It is.
And as you know, because the equipment there, nice to know. I knew you would know, Mark. I knew you'd know that desk or something else there.
So anything else that they were playing then, Dave, that was interesting?
Well, after the Money run-throughs, which were very interesting and pretty much near the end result on the album, they ran through some of Don't Kill the Whale, or all of Don't Kill the Whale. But what I recall, now either I'm mad or not, but I recall a much longer bass intro to Don't Kill the Whale. Unless, of course, memory is fading and they were playing the bass part. But I just remember this elongated rumble, which went up and down and up and down, more of an intro into the beginning of it anyway. So if you can imagine taking bass part and putting it before that. So that's what I recall, because obviously when the album came out a number of months after, I'd listened to this in the studio, because this is This is June, isn't it? So I was in there June. And so this is pre the album coming. I'm listening to this. So that's what I thought. I thought, where's all that bass solo? Where's all that intro? So it's on a tape somewhere, you know.
Well, it's funny though. Alan's drum kit had those bizarre fluted toms, very 70s, and it was very colorful too. It was one of the things that kind of stuck out. I was like, wow, it was like every color of the rainbow was on that drum kit there. But there was also a lot of other percussion and instruments stacked around there, you know, and about there. So I guess, is there anything else that you saw there that was kind of interesting that maybe didn't appear on the record?
I don't know. There's cocktails in there. There's sort of timpani and the glockenspiel and the kettle drums. I give them a roll as well, but that's a bit of topographic, isn't it? So I was just practicing my topographic notions. So I think they had at the time, was it the keyboard RMA, is it? RMA and a Baritron and Poly Moog, for better or worse, as we all know in the conversations. But yeah, I really like people to actually have a good close look. And I know there's a certain few people out there who are going to really enjoy looking at the Chris Squire setup.
Absolutely. I mean, when I saw that photograph, I was absolutely fascinated by it. And I'm sure someone like Miguel Falcao will be delighted to see it. But did they all have sort of different areas, or was the kit, it's difficult to see from the photographs. It just all seems to be all crammed together. But were there definite areas for different musicians?
Definitely were, because I also, when I was walking around, I wasn't quite sure how many photos I could sneak in or what I was allowed to do. So, you know, I did them anyway. But of course, Steve had a whole line of guitars. You know, he may have had four or five guitars on one line. There was the guitar maybe for John in the booth. There was other keyboards to one side. They certainly had those. But remember, at this point, of course, most of it had been done and completed and mixed, and it was ready. So this is moved. It would be moved to the one side. So in case there was any last minute, I guess, alterations to be done. But that's why you'll see it bunched up like it was.
One of the pictures that I really enjoyed there was seeing Alan sitting at a keyboard. We all know that he's a very good piano player, so obviously it's not too big a surprise to see him doing that. But I was wondering, do you happen to remember what he was playing at that point?
I wish I had my memory that way. But Nigel Ludby was there. He's a long time, a helper and part of the crowd. He was good as well. I think it was just that as I was looking at the picture, and they were kind of experimenting on the sound, so I don't know actually how new that was. ELP was 77, wasn't it? That had that. So it was still relatively new. I don't remember what he was playing, but, you know, he was competently moving around, and Nigel was flicking some switches and stuff, and it was all very chilled and a wonderful sound. You can see the speaker system next to it. I believe they're hundreds of thousands of pounds, that keyboard.
One of the ways in which the band got rid of the money that they'd made, of course. And so tell us then, what do you think was the most exciting bit of the trip from a fan's perspective?
Well, I'm not quite sure how often this thing kind of happens. I mean, how many people have sat in with Yes in a studio, because the whole thing was amazing, frankly. But I suppose sat in the studio, listened to Chris and Steve and chatting about the music that was in front of them, and I was, you know, parachuted in there to have my brother sat at one end and I was near the guys, just listening to what was going on and how they were speaking about this kind of thing. I think it's just very rare that I got to that point. I think I'm just very privileged, to be honest. And isn't it great that, you know, I had the foresight to really take the pictures, because how many other pictures are in the studio of 70? I don't know. Apart from that wonderful video, you know, the making of. That's the one that should go with it. That's a brilliant to go with these pictures. And, of course, this was not too long after punk, and on the wall, they had that picture you'll see there, the Queen.
Yeah.
And which said, they put a sticker across, because they just had a lot of slagging off in the newspapers and the sounds. And and the like. So that said, never mind the bollocks, you know, it's yes. So, which I loved, and so I'm happy I got a picture of all this.
Well, I was doing quite a bit of looking, that's for sure. I mean, obviously, the equipment is obviously fascinating. I mean, like the whole Chris Squire thing. I mean, he has a whole array of different volume pedals and wah pedals, and he has the bass Taurus pedals there for the supersonic low end that he has. I mean, it's fascinating because these things obviously added so much to his sound, right? I mean, he was known for having this kind of a, you know, chorusing effect that he used for like Starship Trooper, and he had like a, you know, distortion that he sometimes used to give it a little bit more bite when he did some of his higher up notes and stuff. So it was incredible, like how he incorporated all this stuff in his music. So to see it, you know, properly like this is a great thing to have, and I'm thank you for sharing these kind of pictures with us.
No, I'm really pleased as a musician. I'm not a musician, so I really would like to know what musicians think of what they're seeing, because I'm not sure they've had the pictures like this before of how it was done. It's a shame that they don't do this in all their album.
Because, I mean, one thing that's for sure, and I'm sure Miguel will probably have a minor stroke when he notices this, but on the Moog pedals there's a little spot up on the top where there's like a graphic equalizer where you can adjust the sound of the Moog pedals, and you can literally see his settings there on there if you zoom into it. So, I mean, for all those Chris Squire aficionados, I'm sure they'll be probably zooming in and writing down those settings for their own, you know, kind of Taurus bass pedals to try and get as close to sound as possible.
Yeah. And how cruel am I, because I've had those pictures, and I know those Chris Squire fans were going to just die when I put this one out, and I've had this one in my pocket for only 42 years, but let's hope it's been worth the wait. But I know I'd like people to comment on the equipment, because
yes,
I think it's fascinating, and well done on spotting the desk and everything.
Yeah. So one thing that I'm very curious about, though, Davey, that you got to answer is: do you think your view of Tormato, that you view Tormato differently because you were there when it was being worked on? Do you think, like, if you weren't there, that you might look at Tormato differently?
I look at Tormato as an album that I heard, obviously, and in there on a different way. And I think the better equipment, the better the album is. I like it. I like the album, and I've been listening to it since I knew I was going to dig all this up and tell the story. So it does get too much of a slag, and it could do with a new Roger Dean cover, and it could do with a mix. But I guess that's not going to happen, apparently. But it could have been, better promoted, or I don't know, something. But I think the better equipment, you'll hear so much more. I mean, it's a stonking music on there. It's really rocking, a rocking album.
And how do you think, Dave, the band, I mean, you said they're laid back. Do you think that they seemed pleased with what had gone on? They didn't seem to be at each other's throats or anything.
No. When I was there, and obviously four of them, the five, were there, they were all relaxed, chilled. I know when we were leaving, there was going to be some sort of big get together and maybe some executives come in and whatever. But everyone was very relaxed. I mean, to have me in there and my brother, that must have been a relaxed stage. There was no stress involved in that. I think they were happy with their product, frankly.
Yeah.
That's the way it looked to me. I mean, and look what happened after. You know, you had some of the greatest concerts Yes have ever done in 1978, in the same year.
Yeah, and you were at Wembley in 78, weren't you?
I did. That was my second time down to London. I stayed in a bed and breakfast and did all three nights.
Must have been pretty impressive.
Well, I didn't know it was going to be, but I guess, you know, I was on pretty much of a high. And I mean, obviously the BBC recorded one is one of the greatest things ever for Yes, I think. I know, being there on the night, there's not a person I know have ever commented on that gig to say it was nothing but astounding, life changing. You know, you think, oh my God, I'm another planet here, another level. Really. That's the one here. That's the one I go back to if I had my time.
Yeah,
I'd be back in 78 at Wembley at those gigs.
Even the photographs from those gigs are incredible. I know Jeremy North, one of our old friends, was there and took some photographs in the round. Brilliant. Well, listen, Dave, thank you very much indeed for coming on again and sharing another amazing Yes story. So do go to the show notes and have a very, very careful look at all those photographs. I've put them up there, and I think, Dave, you're going to put this story and those photographs up on Facebook as well. But it's been absolutely brilliant picking your brains again about another wonderful Yes experience. So thank you very much indeed, Dave.
Thank you, both of you, for letting me tell the story.